Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good. And Jay Carney, it turns out, is probably a better political analyst and reporter than he is a press secretary. But we probably came to that conclusion a while ago. Anyway, he's now with CNN, as most folks know, and he was part of the panel on State of the Union with Candy Crowley. They were talking about where Democrats stand with respect to the midterm elections. A lot of Democratic columnists, New York Times included, trying to say that because Republican challengers haven't separated from Democratic incumbents, that the Democrats are actually in pretty good shape right now. Folks like S.C. Cupp were disagreeing. And Jay Carney surprisingly said, yeah, pretty bad year coming up for Democrats.
This is not going to be a good year for Democrats by definition, right? The last time an incumbent president's party did well in a midterm was 2002, which was a very strange midterm in the wake of 9/11. And the sixth year of a presidency is always particularly bad for the president's party. Then you couple that with the fact that so many seats are being defended by Democrats in red states, where Mitt Romney did very well against the president, double digits in most cases. And there's no outcome in November that anybody could say would be great for Democrats, except for barely holding on to the Senate.
First of all, Jim, you can just hear the relief, I think, in Carney's voice that he has this job instead of his old one. But secondly, he's got a pretty accurate read there that the best case scenario is barely hanging on.
I salute you, Greg, for being able to tell the difference between Jay Carney, White House press secretary, and Jay Carney, CNN commentator, because, you know, 99% of their messaging sounds the same. Very little of what Carney said was unbelievably surprising. I think what's interesting is that in the new position, he's just not denying it anymore. Right towards the end, he says, look, you know, keeping the Senate would be a major victory for the Democrats. So we kind of know they're now in the neighborhood where they think they're going to lose at least four. And now the question is, do they lose the fifth one and they need Joe Biden to break ties, or do they lose six and Republicans get the Senate? The fact that he can't really, you know, come out and say, game, set, and match, we're going to be okay, kind of says something. Now, it is worth noting that there's been some not so great polling for Republicans, I'd say, in the past week or so. I understand the National Republican Senatorial Committee is not thrilled with my coverage of that and my pointing out that things are not going perfectly swimmingly. Doesn't mean there's not time to turn it around. It's not like, you know, any of these races have really fallen away from Republicans. And a bit of good news this morning when Scott Brown tied with Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire. So the outlook for Republicans still looks pretty good. Still some work to do in a lot of these, you know, ones that were up in the air like Colorado and Iowa. We will see how that shakes out. But that seems like a good segue to Iowa, Greg.
Hillary, of course, is thinking about running in 2016. As many folks have said, she's thinking about exactly when she's going to announce that she's in, because this has pretty much been baked in the cake ever since the end of the 2012 campaign. Now she's got more issues to answer for when it comes to Benghazi. Of course, the Select House Committee on Benghazi is going to be having its first hearing this week, and there may be a new bombshell. Whether it's in the hearings this week or later is unclear, but this is from Cheryl Atkinson over at the Daily Signal. As the House Select Committee on Benghazi prepares for its first hearing this week, a former State Department diplomat is coming forward with a startling allegation. Hillary Clinton confidants were part of an operation to separate damaging documents before they were turned over to the Accountability Review Board. We're talking about former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Raymond Maxwell. At the time, he was a leader in the State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs. Basically, he found out that there was a weekend document session held in the basement of the State Department's headquarters in a room underneath the jogger's entrance. And so he walked in, wasn't aware of this, even though subordinates of his were taking part in this separation. And so in this conversation, this person says, Ray, we are to go through these stacks and pull out anything that might put anybody in the Near Eastern Affairs front office or the seventh floor, which is where Hillary and the other top state officials had their offices, in a bad light. He says, isn't that unethical? Ray, those are our orders. And shortly thereafter, two of Clinton's top aides came in to make sure that the procedure was going as planned. So I'm sure there will be quick and swift denials to this, but there's just more for Trey Gowdy to chew on here and more for Hillary Clinton to answer for.
She was at the Steak Fry Tom Harkin Grill this weekend. My understanding is that she did it in preparation for being grilled by Trey Gowdy. Now, what's interesting about this revelation, Cheryl Atkinson is still on the case, still finding fascinating details. And notice no one is really able to say, oh, that doesn't sound like Hillary. Sure, people wouldn't do that. Come on. And in fact, it might actually explain a little bit about the ARB, that it's tough for them to find something if the documents have already been cleaned out. Hopefully, you know, Trey Gowdy and his crew will get to the bottom of this. There's good reason to think these guys are going to take this seriously and keep digging until they get to the bottom of it. We'll see whether this comes to, you know, any serious scrutiny of Hillary Clinton. But that does seem to indicate they recognize the potential trouble they were in and began covering up their bad decision-making as soon as they possibly could.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and this is about ISIS and a double header here, potentially a triple header. The president was interviewed by the New York Times about his decision to call for military action against ISIS, said he was leaning in that direction even before the beheadings began. But then here's the paragraph that's getting a lot of attention. If he had been an advisor to ISIS, Mr. Obama added, he would not have killed the hostages, but released them and pinned notes on their chest saying, "Stay out of here. This is none of your business." Such a move, he speculated, might have undercut support for military intervention. So, Jim, don't know if that was a specific question that the reporter asked him, but you and a lot of other people are saying, why is the president spending time thinking about what advice he'd offer to ISIS if asked?
Yeah, I posted this morning. I put a good portion of the Jolt discussing this, just, you know, trying to make sense of it. A few folks have said, oh, you're always bashing the president. You always, you know, okay, keep in mind that I'd really love to see the U.S. put a whooping on ISIS so severe that they'd never come back, at least as far as we could tell from this Times reporter. Were we trying to get into the mindset of ISIS? Were we trying to anticipate their next move? It was just, no, if I were advising ISIS, this is what I tell them to do. Okay, why? Why are you imagining this scenario, Mr. President? It just seems odd. It almost like in a very roundabout way, he's observing that ISIS chose the most provocative course of action possible. And yes, they did. Right? So it's not that clearly they're not afraid of us. Clearly, they're not trying to deter us from military action. I think that they're trying to either provoke us into military action or on some level, they just kind of want to show, hey, look what we can do to America. This is who ISIS is. And it seems like the president is still kind of academically studying the whole thing and playing theoretical games. And I wonder why they didn't do that. Well, because they're homicidal maniacs, Mr. President. Okay, you know, stop looking for logic where they're not going to be. And so, again, maybe this is just an offhand comment that the president said to someone visiting the Oval Office. But it just seems and feels weird because you can't picture FDR saying, you know, if I were advising the Japanese, I would have told them to hit the fuel depots at Pearl Harbor, but not the rest of, you know, or Churchill saying, if I were advising, you just, why is our guy imagining advising their guys? And, you know, people saying, oh, I'm being negative. No, but it's just weird. Ace of Spades, among others, have kind of wondered about the president's mental state and you know, what he's thinking these days. And a comment like this just has you kind of raising that same question of, like, why is he thinking about what he would tell them to do, since obviously they don't care at all what anyone in the Western world thinks, much less what the American president thinks.
It's an interesting parallel to a new NBC poll on this, because 62% agree that action should be taken to stop ISIS, but 68% have little or only some confidence in the Obama administration's ability to carry out this plan, Jim. So when you compare beheading versus note pinning on chests and sleeves, perhaps there's a reason for that disconnect between wanting to take them out and thinking we actually can do it under this president.
I think a lot of Americans are in this place of, we know ISIS is evil. And whatever beefs and problems we have with the president, and some of us have very considerable ones, he is still the commander in chief, and we still want to see a world in which people are afraid of harming Americans. So as far as we're concerned, you go get him, Mr. President. So we're into it. We just kind of want to make sure he's still into it, because every once in a while you get these comments that suggest the president is kind of half-hearted about this. His staff keeps emphasizing how reluctant he is. Look, to quote the wise war philosopher Yoda, do or do not, there is no try. Now, so right now, a good portion of our audience is saying, wars not make one great, Jim. So, but nonetheless, like, you know, look, you at some point, the president of the United States had to say, look, here is an enemy that has sworn to harm us, and they've made it very, very clear. They are gaining territory. They are gaining resources. They are gaining recruits. They got 31,000 guys. What are we going to do about it? I think the simplest and easiest solution is, let's kill them, right? I mean, let's keep killing them and keep killing them until there aren't enough of them left, and until they're running in fear and they realize that, You don't want to mess with America anymore. But I don't know if I get that vibe from the president. I hope we're not, you know, going to war in order to merely manage the problem, so to speak.
All right. Quick follow-up. This is our chaser for today. Quick follow-up to our martini from the end of last week when John Kerry said, we're not at war. This is a major, counterterrorism operation or something to that extent. Marie Harf at the State Department saying the same thing. More Obama officials over the weekend saying, yeah, this is war. Then John Kerry was asked the question on Face the Nation, and we got a Kerry classic.
This is not a war. This is not combat troops on the ground. It's not hundreds of thousands of people. It's not that kind of mobilization. But in terms of Al-Qaeda, which we have used the word war with, yeah, we're at war with Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. And in the same context, if you want to use it, yes, we're at war with ISIL in that sense.
Jim, thankfully that's cleared up and we can just move on.
Let me be clear, Greg. We are not at war, except for the part where we are at war. So this is, in fact, Schrodinger's war. Like the cat in the box, we are simultaneously in a state of war and not war simultaneously. Yeah, just stop talking, Mr. Secretary of State. I'm kind of left sputtering because it's so far from what we need to hear, and it just suggests that this administration is into cute playing games and all of that, and it just points to really not good things coming our way. Hopefully they get their hearts and minds into it and totally focused on this, and hopefully things go well. We will see how it shakes out, but kind of an ominous indicator to begin the week, Greg.
Yeah, obviously we hope that he's able to get more allies to the cause here, but not hard to imagine why he's getting reluctance when that's the case he's making.
Who could say no to a rallying cry like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You picture, the Saudi ambassador or somebody on their side. So what are you asking me for? What, you want help, but you don't want help, but it's a war, but it's not really, just keep it simple, folks.
Oh, brother. And that's just Monday. Jim, talk to you later.
See you Wednesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Jim will be out until Wednesday, but please tune in on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.